This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Amanda Parrish, Beaver Project Director for the Lands Council, a local grassroots nonprofit dedicated to protecting the quality of life in the inland Northwest. Amanda has studied biodiverse ecosystems in Ecuador, done forest monitoring with the CDA tribe, and now works with the Lands Council, revitalizing the inland Northwest through beaver restoration. Amanda Parrish is here today to tell us about the beaver solution and how beavers may provide an alternative to concrete dams for water storage needs, as well as helping to protect and restore ecosystems. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Lands Council?
Yes, the Lands Council started in Spokane, Washington, and continues to focus here in the inland Northwest. So we're really a homegrown organization that protects and revitalizes our inland Northwest's forest, water, and wildlife.
Before we speak about the Beaver Project, perhaps you could provide some general background. What are the benefits of beavers? What do they contribute to the ecosystems they live in?
Sure. Just a little background on beaver ecology. Most people probably associate beavers with building dams from their cutting down wood with their large teeth. Most people have seen that sort of thing before. The reason that beavers build dams is there's actually two main reasons. And the first is to regulate water levels. Because beavers build their lodge, their home, quite near to the water, by building a dam that can regulate the water level so that there is an underwater entrance to their home, which helps protect them from predators. So that's the first main reason that beavers build dams. And the second is that beavers actually don't hibernate during the winter. So they need to have pooled water that's deep enough where the pond won't freeze over entirely because they store food, a food cache underwater of branches and that sort of thing. They're herbivores. And so that's why beavers build dams. And what that ends up doing for watersheds is it slows the flow of water, especially spring runoff is slowed and stored on the land longer, so it increases late season flow in the summer and early fall. It also helps to reduce sedimentation in streams, so the dams actually can help collect some of the excess sediment in streams, and the ponds behind the dams actually raise the water level in the ground, which benefits vegetation surrounding the dams, creates wetlands, and these wetlands provide habitat for a number of species, for migratory waterfowl, amphibians, for fish rearing. So there's really a number of benefits that these dams and the ponds have in watersheds.
How important have beavers been to Northwest ecosystems historically?
Historically, in all of North America, beaver, since the last ice age, have been the dominant manager of watersheds. And the estimates are prior to the mid-1800s, beaver numbered in 60 to 400 million across North America, from the Arctic tundra all the way down to northern Mexico. So if you can picture that, what that means is that beaver were present in every waterway throughout North America, and especially here in the Pacific Northwest. So there's really a historic precedent for beaver. Today, the estimates for North America are that beaver populations are down to 6 to 12 million. And here in eastern Washington, we estimate around 50,000, which is just a fraction of what it used to be. The reason that population numbers are so down is actually because of trapping in the 1850s. A lot of people can think of, you know, beaver hats and pelts and that sort of thing that trappers used to wear. At one point, beaver fur was in high demand. There was a high value associated with beaver pelts. And actually, in the Pacific Northwest, beaver were trapped out for political reasons. The Hudson Bay Company in Canada thought that if beaver were trapped out completely from the Pacific Northwest, the United States wouldn't expand into the Pacific Northwest because the land would be completely devalued. And so the Hudson Bay Company actually established a fur desert policy in this area around the Columbia River. And from about the 1820s through the 1850s, trapping was regular. And we have records from diaries by trappers that actually talk about the decline of beaver, and some trappers even observe that even in the 1850s, with beaver being trapped out of the area, there was increased erosion and sedimentation in the rivers, and it really impacted wildlife populations. One head trapper wrote that this part of the country, though once abundant in beaver, is entirely ruined. And that was really the point of these expeditions, was to ruin the land. And so today, you know, numbers are just a fraction of what they used to be. But if you picture what it was prior to the 1820s trapping expeditions, the West was a much wetter place and would have been filled with beavers. In every stream, there would be beaver wetlands all over our state.
You've alluded to this a bit already, but would you say a bit more about the characteristic and lifestyle of beavers, what they eat, what their social networks are like, and so forth?
Yeah, so beavers are herbivores, so they eat the bark and cambium of trees, and the cambium's the very outer layer, not the heartwood. The cambium contains the most nutrients, along with the leaves and smaller twigs of trees. And they also eat grasses and sedges and tubers. So just any sort of riparian or wetland plant is what their diet consists of. And they're actually really fascinating. They have a really strong family unit, and beavers mate for life. And so once beavers pair, they stay together, and they usually have kits every year, and that's around 2 to 4 kits on average born every year in the spring. And then the beavers stay together as a family until a beaver turns about 2, and then it can leave and move on to make its own family. Or if the food resources allow, a lot of times the 2-year-old beavers will stay with the family to help maintain the dams and that sort of thing.
Would you now speak about what led to the Beaver Project? Why did it originally come about?
Yes. Originally, back in, I believe it was 2006, Washington State passed House Bill 2860, which is the Columbia River Basin Water Management Program, known as the Columbia River Initiative for short. And what this bill proposes is that Washington State needs to find new ways to increase water supplies by 2 to 3 million acre feet of water because of climate change predictions showing that the snowpack will be melting early in the year, and therefore that stored water is going to be released into our systems earlier in the year, meaning that that critical time where we need water in the summer and late fall, there won't be as much water. So both out-of-stream users and fish in-stream users need more water. And so the Lands Council heard about this bill, and a lot of the proposals to solve this were to build large-scale dams. And we thought, why not use beavers to accomplish this? Why not use an animal that already builds dams and help to repopulate, you know, beavers throughout Washington State to store water? So in 2009, we did a study to determine two things: the average water storage of beaver dams currently in eastern Washington, and then also to estimate the habitat availability for beaver reintroduction in eastern Washington. And we found that the average beaver dam here in our study area stores about 3.5 acre feet of water per pond, but each family maintains sometimes up to 10 dams, 10 ponds per family. And then we estimate that an additional 5 to 10 times that amount of water is stored in the groundwater, but that's just an estimate, and we really need to look further into that. And then the second objective of the study, to determine the available habitat based on a number of things such as stream order, elevation, slope, and proximity to transportation, we found that there are close to 10,000 stream miles of beaver habitat here in eastern Washington in the 12-county study area where we were looking. So that was our original focus, was on water storage. But since then, our project has evolved in scope a little bit, and we're still looking at the water storage aspect, but we're also trying to see how beaver dams and beaver habitat affect water quality. And so we're trying to look at how they reduce turbidity in streams, which is the sediment level in the water column, how they can reduce phosphorus and other high nutrient levels in streams because of the wetlands they create. We're also looking at the wetland restoration aspect, I mentioned that we estimated groundwater to be 5 to 10 times the amount of water stored above ground. However, since then we've found that it's very difficult to quantify groundwater, especially without a team of hydrologists. And so we've modified our project to use vegetation as an indicator of what's going on with the groundwater. And so we do in-depth vegetation surveys at beaver ponds and try to see how the vegetation is changing and hopefully capturing the rate and extent at which vegetation becomes more hydric plants and wetland plants to show that that water table is actually closer to the surface.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Amanda Parrish, Beaver Project Director for the Lands Council. Our topic is the beaver solution and how beavers can provide an alternative to concrete dams for water storage needs, as well as helping to protect and restore ecosystems. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Going back to the water storage issue, does it seem feasible to actually use beavers to provide water storage needs for eastern Washington at this point?
I believe it is feasible. I don't believe that it can be the only tool for water storage here in eastern Washington, but I think there's an abundance of scientific literature on the benefits beaver have on ecosystems and the benefits they have on late season flow for storing water, storing that spring runoff. However, I think the strength of our project is building on this pre-existing science, but in addition, it's really applying the science to relocations that we do throughout eastern Washington and then being able to communicate these concepts to landowners, because we've found that for a program such as ours to be successful, we really need to change public opinion about beavers so that landowners don't look at them as a nuisance and understand the benefits they have on raising the water table and increasing water storage throughout the year. So without a shift in public opinion, this won't be feasible on a large scale.
Let's talk about some of the problems associated with beavers and humans living in close proximity, since you were just alluding to that. Would you underscore those?
Yes. A lot of landowners call us wanting their beavers trapped out immediately and not wanting to hear other solutions. And a lot of the problems we hear are beavers are cutting down my trees. You know, we have a 50-year-old cottonwood that the beaver's attacking right now. Or a lot of times the ponds reach a high enough level where they're maybe close to flooding a home or flooding some agriculture fields and that sort of thing. And another big problem is beavers damming culverts and causing damage to roadbeds, because if you think of a culvert on a roadbed, it's basically already a dam with a small hole in it. So beavers actually plug up culverts all the time to quickly raise water levels and make a pond. So those are the main problems that we hear from landowners. But all of those problems have easy solutions. Relatively easy compared to trapping them out every year. Originally, when we began this project, we thought that we would focus on repopulating beaver throughout the state and relocating all nuisance beaver to more rural national forests and that sort of thing. But the more research we've done, the more we find that if there is good habitat for the beaver, if there are aspen and willow and cottonwood, we can trap them out. We can trap out a family, but another family will come every year after that, and it's just not economically feasible to do that every year. And so now we're really focusing on, as I mentioned, helping to educate landowners to the benefits of beavers and helping them solve their problems so that they can live with beavers. So there are a couple ways to protect trees. You can wrap them in wire. It's pretty simple to do, and the beaver quickly get frustrated and will leave those trees alone. And if that isn't something the landowner wants to do, you can also paint trees with non-toxic latex paint mixed with sand and paint the trunks of the trees, and that also deters beaver from eating them. So if you take away their food source without taking away all the trees, the beaver will move on if you want to save those trees. If the pond level is a problem, if it's flooding an agriculture field or getting close to flooding a home, we can install pond leveling devices that are really simple to make and install. It's just a large pipe with an inlet at the pond that's covered by a circular fence so that the beaver don't notice that the water is being taken in by this pipe. And if they do notice it, they won't be able to plug it and then simply put that pipe over the dam and have the water spill out on the other side of the dam. And the height of that pipe determines the maximum height of the pond. And so it's a really simple solution to maintaining pond levels. There's also some really simple engineering techniques to protect a culvert from beaver damming. And so we're trying to really focus on installing more of these beaver management devices.
How responsive are the landowners to these ideas of living with beavers rather than getting rid of them?
Most landowners we work with are pretty responsive. We go out and visit. If we get a call about a nuisance beaver, we explain to the landowner. The first thing they ask for is usually, can you trap out this family? Can you relocate it? And we explain, as I just did, that yes, we can, but it's not the most effective means of protecting your property. And then I explain the other methods we can do, and then we visit the landowners, talk to them about the tree protection methods we can use, or the culvert protection, or the pond leveling, depending on the problem. And a lot of landowners are really receptive, especially if they realize that if they hire us to trap, it's going to probably be something annual, whereas if they can install a protective device, it's sort of a one-time thing that requires very little maintenance over the years.
Would you give an overview of what you are doing currently for the Beaver Project, the specifics of what your project is and what you're trying to determine?
Yes. So our project's pretty multifaceted. As I mentioned, we try not to focus on relocation. That being said, we do relocate families of beaver every year. In 2010, we relocated 4 beaver families, 28 beaver in total. And in 2011, we plan to relocate 5. And what relocation really affords us a unique opportunity to look at the before and after effects of beaver on their ecosystems. As I mentioned, the research we're doing really is just building on pre-existing science. And if anything, it just adds some anecdotes about how beaver affect habitat here in eastern Washington. But we're really hoping to capture the rate and extent of change that beaver have on ecosystems. So we spend the year in the winter and spring setting up appropriate relocation sites with public lands, such as the Colville National Forest, and also working with private landowners who want beaver on their property. And so we do habitat assessments to see if there's enough vegetation and enough deep water for the beaver to be relocated to that site. And then we conduct our vegetation analysis and make sure to capture the current vegetation and the current water quality, the stream discharge rate, and that sort of thing. And then later, our trapping season begins June 20th through September 30th. And that's because, as I mentioned, beaver have kits every year in the spring, so we want to wait until the kits are no longer nursing and would survive a relocation, because we live trap the entire family since beaver have such a strong family unit. So we begin trapping June 30th through September 30th, wanting to finish it up with enough time for the beaver to establish shelter and a food cache before the winter. So after relocating them, we can then go back the following year and continue to take our vegetation monitoring data along with the water quality and water discharge and see that rate of change. So that's the relocation side of things, but another big part of it is trying to do beaver management projects as much as we can, because keeping beaver where they are is really the most effective solution to keeping these watershed benefits. And so throughout the year, we work with landowners to do tree protection, pond leveling, and culvert protection. And then the sort of last big part of our project is doing community outreach. As I mentioned, it's not going to be successful to use beaver as watershed restoration tools unless the public is on board with this idea that beaver are beneficial and not a nuisance. So we do a lot of public outreach to landowners. We have a lot of fun events for families to have a picnic with the beavers at a local park where there are beaver dams, to teach families and children about beaver benefits. We go into schools and teach kids about beaver ecosystem benefits. So it's a very multifaceted project here.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Amanda Parrish, Beaver Project Director for the Lands Council. Our topic is the Beaver Solution and how beavers can provide an alternative to concrete dams for water storage needs, as well as helping to protect and restore ecosystems. You've said a few words about this, but what do you see as the key challenges you have faced in the Beaver Project?
Really, our biggest challenge is shifting landowner opinion and shifting public opinion toward beaver and being able to communicate these scientific concepts that many environmental scientists already see as obvious and proven. It can be challenging to communicate that to the public. A lot of people just think of beaver as cutting down trees and destroying ecosystems, when really the trees and the food sources that beaver prefer, such as willow and aspen, actually regenerate from being cut down. And if you think about it, these trees co-evolved with beaver over centuries. So aspen and willow actually regenerate very well from being chewed by beaver. And it's hard to communicate the long-term landscape ecology concepts of beaver habitat to landowners and really change landowners' mind that, yes, they might look like they're deforesting your property, but if you wait 10 years, you'll see an abundance of all these trees again, more than you see now.
To what extent is work going on elsewhere to use beavers to address water storage issues and or ecosystem protection?
Well, here in Washington State, there's a group out in the Nuthau Valley that's been doing beaver relocation a little longer than we have, and they work on the National Forest to relocate beaver into the upper extents of the watershed. Their aim is to show that beaver ponds can actually lower stream temperatures, because a lot of our streams here in Washington face high temperatures in the summer, temperatures that are too high for fish populations. And so beaver ponds, among all their other ecosystem services, actually serve to lower stream temperatures, which to some seems a little counterintuitive, because a pond is obviously a larger area of open water, so there's increased solar radiation. But more than the water that's stored above ground, there's, as I've mentioned, 5 to 10 times that amount of water stored in the ground, and that water is actually cooled from being stored in the ground and released downstream. So the Methow Valley group is finding that beaver can be successful at lowering stream temperatures. There's also some work going on in the John Day Basin to use beaver as watershed restoration tools, where that area is similar to our area here in eastern Washington. It faces a lot of erosion, lowered water table. It's a really arid part of the country, and they're using beaver to help keep water on the land for longer periods of time throughout the year. And that's just here in the Pacific Northwest. There are groups in Colorado that do this sort of work, in New Mexico, upstate New York. We network with a lot of other beaver organizations.
What are the long-term goals of the Lands Council Beaver Project? What do you hope it will accomplish?
We're hoping to actually change policy here in Washington State to make beaver relocation and beaver management an easier thing for groups such as ourselves and for Washington Fish and Wildlife to accomplish. And so we're hoping to be in works with Washington Fish and Wildlife and the Department of Ecology to find ways to really adapt the policy toward beaver. We've also worked with two groups, one in Utah, the Grand Canyon Trust, and one down in New Mexico, Wild Earth Guardians, to make a national petition for national forests to include a beaver policy as part of their climate change adaptation policy, to use beaver as something to manage the problems of climate change predictions. So we're really hoping to see policy changes along with our every year management and relocation that we do.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I hope that in the future, beaver are used as watershed restoration tools, as the go-to restoration tool. It's really so fulfilling to be part of a project that has a unique and natural-based restoration mode. I hope that this grows throughout the country.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Amanda.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Amanda Parrish, Beaver Project Director for the Lands Council. For more information, check on the web at www.landscouncil.org. Again, that's landscouncil.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters Sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.